Welcome to The Learning Curve with Roger and Virginia. The Learning Curve is about helping kids get good grades in school and succeeding in life. It's for all parents, teachers and students, as all of life is a learning curve, and you succeed in life to the extent that you can learn easily. Today's show is about, are you really ready for college? It's also about how to get ready for college and how to perform well in college when you get there. To get more information on the material we cover in our shows, you can go to howtolearneasily.com. If you've got any questions you'd like to ask of Roger or Virginia, send them to questions@howtolearneasily.com. Today's guest is Dr. Robert Newman. He's the former dean of Marquette University. He's also the author of Are You Really Ready for College? Dr. Bob, as he's affectionately known, has over 30 years of counseling students, so it's really hands-on experience seeing the difficulties that college students run into when they first arrive. In fact, on his website, which I do recommend you go to, it's a wonderful site with a lot of good information there.
And it is the name of the book, that is Are You Really Ready for College.com.
Dr. Bob, going over your site, I was struck by some statistics that you cite. It's actually horrific figures. I see that 25% of college freshmen don't return to campus for their sophomore year.
That's correct.
That's pretty frightful. And only 36% graduate from college in 4 years, and nearly 40% take 7 or more years or never graduate.
Correct, yeah. Aren't those awful figures?
Yeah, these kids really need some help in getting it right in college. And I notice on your website that this book, in reading through the information, is tremendously valuable to parents and also the high school teachers. They all should be reading this book from what I'm seeing.
I hope so. I speak to students in the book,
yeah,
which is what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
But of course, parents and teachers are part of this process, so I'd like them to be familiar with the things that I'm suggesting also.
Yes. Folks, at the website, you'll actually see the table of contents and some sections of the book that you can go through and see how it applies to you. There are the statistics there on what it actually costs to go to the relative types of universities and how much extra each year costs when your kid isn't hacking it properly.
And that actually is a very interesting point that you bring up about students not being ready for college. Is that something I hadn't really thought of, is the financial effect on families. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. As everybody knows, a college education has always been expensive, but it's very expensive these days. If you've noticed on the news, more people are talking about the financial burden that students take with them once they leave college. And this financial burden, of course, has a great deal to do with how they're going to start this next phase of their life after college. But you can imagine, when you consider how much money it costs to complete a four-year college education, and then when you see how many students take longer than 4 years, it goes up, you know, another 25%, then it goes up another 50%. Those are just horrific numbers, and I hope parents, as well as students and teachers, understand what kind of an effect that is going to have on them in the present, and then, as I say, the effect it's going to have on students in the future. And also, people, if they want to take a wider political view of this, you can imagine how much money is being misused with regard to financial aid, because Now these students have to extend that financial aid, and then, of course, again, that goes into the future, but that means less financial aid for students coming into college. It's a terrible economic and financial problem here.
What's the effect on the student when they fail to do it in the usual required short time and they actually have to take extra time? Does it impact their ego and employability later on?
Again, this is one of the very distressing things that I see, and that is many students are accepting the fact that a college education takes more than 4 years. They sort of feel that, well, this is the way it goes. And I have a feeling that because so many students are taking 5 and 6 years to graduate, so they are out now in the workforce, I have a feeling employers really don't care because so many students are coming into the workforce with longer than 4 years for their college education. It's terrible to say, but I'm pretty sure that they don't care that much about it.
That's a sad commentary, actually.
It is.
I mean,
yes.
If I was an employer, I'd be more inclined to be interested in a student who could actually get it done in the usual, correct, predicted time.
It's been true for really a long time that employers will ask an applicant if they went to college, where they went to college, and did they graduate? Yes. But without having the evidence, I have a strong feeling that employers don't ask for transcripts.
Yeah, how long did it take
college.
You to do it?
So how long does it take, and what kind of grades did you earn when you were in college?
Right. You know, from my memory, college in Australia in my day was 3 years. Yeah, and in England, too. But, of course...
Because high school is longer. Or secondary school is longer.
Yes. Not necessarily. What they accomplish at high school in those days, we called it matriculation, which is graduation from high school, was always viewed as being a very higher level, superior level than
I see.
And in fact, that the joke in the British educational system was that the first year of American college was actually just catching up with the high school stuff. Not having done them both, I can't comment. I just say that's what we thought. But it is interesting comparing the educational situation and its accomplishments with what's going on in countries like Switzerland or Scandinavia. I'm out of date in Australia because I left here in 65. So
U.S., of course, you know, has dropped way down in terms of the whole world, has dropped way down in terms of educational accomplishment. In terms of percentage of students who complete a college degree, I think on that scale, worldwide, the U.S. is number 14 or 15.
Yeah, I've been watching those figures as well. Of course, as you and I were discussing just prior to coming on here, you're one of the very few people I've spoken to who actually knew that the Department of Education survey, Adult Literacy Survey for 2003, revealed that only 31% of college graduates could pass their competence standard.
Yeah.
And so that gives you an idea of just how difficult it is. When you were counseling students as a dean of college, what was the thing that you most saw as the student difficulty?
They don't know how to study.
And
they don't know a basic concept of learning, which we all either learned or we knew. And that basic concept was, in order to learn, you have to study. In order to gain knowledge that's going to be long-term knowledge, you have to study it. And that means learning takes time. What we know for sure is that students in high school now are studying fewer hours each week than they ever have. So that students going to college may have study skills that allow them to study with concentration maybe only 6 or 7 hours a week. Now when they get to college, the colleges are saying, okay, now you're in college, your education here is a full-time job, so you're expected to study 30 to 40 hours a week. This is when students simply run into a wall. So as I talked with students over the years, I very quickly, early in my career, I very quickly started to ask this as a first question, and that is, how many hours a week do you study? And the answer was almost universally, it all depends, which they mean, it depends if I'm going to have a test coming up, or it depends if I have an assignment. They had no idea of studying every day. It's the habit that they developed in high school, and so many students in high school learn by cramming. They're last-minute learners, and some of them become you know, pretty good at it so that they can earn high grades even though they cram. But, of course, cramming doesn't work
give them knowledge.
In college at all. You know, it's a hopeless way of studying. That's one of the main reasons. Now, not knowing how to study is a lot more than study hours, but it's a good way for people to understand that if students are expected to study a larger number of hours, a greater number of hours in college than in high school, maybe they can understand as they look at their kids in high school that they really don't study very much.
Yeah.
And then because they don't study very much, then the teachers don't give them as much to study.
And don't expect a lot more from them, yeah.
You know, do you see it has kind of a domino effect?
I was going to say that's a downward spiral.
That is a downward spiral.
Now,
precisely.
Aren't they given, when I went to high school many, many years ago, I had homework every single night. I had a reading assignment, or I had practice problems I had to do, and it wasn't just one class. It was every class that I had
something
to do for.
Yes. One of the things that I try to explain in my book is this. I'd like students to stop thinking about studying as simply doing homework. When I'm talking with students, I ask them, what is the difference between studying in grade school and studying in college? And they give me all kinds of good answers, but the main thing is that in college you're studying a lot more. You have a lot more things to learn, and because there's so much more to learn, you have to put so much more in studying. And that means more than what the teacher asks you to do as part of a specific homework assignment. So I say there is homework, which you have to do, but on top of homework, you have to study, and that studying should increase each year of high school so that when you get to college, you know, you're ready to handle that higher number of hours.
On your website, under the Parents tab, a national problem, you say that there's a major misconception about learning. Teachers do most of the work in school, in class, and so this makes many of the students become passive learners. Do you think that has developed over the past, let's say, decade or two, or do you think that's the model that we've been using all along?
It's the model that we've been using. It's just that things have deteriorated to a point now where everything is, in the whole educational system, is very fragile, and we're on the point of it just simply collapsing. It's been going on for a long time. It's just that it has gotten worse and worse over the years.
Okay, you were saying something about the system has become very fragile. Can you explain?
Very fragile, I think, yeah.
Can you explain that a bit more? What do you mean by that?
Yes. First of all, students are asked to learn less and less. You see, because they're learning less, they're studying less. You see? And then when they try to take this step into college, which is a large step, I also say to students, now remember, freshman year of college is not grade 13 for you. You know, you're taking a large step upward intellectually and educationally. So if things are very fragile and gradually deteriorating so that students are learning less and less, and that must be the case because they're studying fewer hours than they ever studied.
Yes.
As you said, quotes back in our day, however far back that may be, we always had a full evening of study for the next day.
Do you think that with the onset of computers and now, of course, all the smartphones and all these devices that we have, where everything is always just in time and always at our fingertips, do you think that this just-in-time learning that these kids are now practicing has come about because of these new devices?
Yeah. Okay. Now, that's my opinion here, and I think I'd be able to back it up.
You are in a position to give a valid opinion.
I think so, and you can see it in the research. Students are not only watching more television than they ever did, but now you add all of these additional electronic communication devices. What it has done is squeezed out traditional educational habits.
Well, you actually mentioned a figure a little while ago, which we've heard before, and that was the average high school student is doing about 6 hours of school time study a week. We'd actually heard the figure was a little less than that, and that's shocking when you look at the amount of time that the kids actually spend at school. So that's really only about 6 hours a week of in-class facing the teacher study time.
Correct.
It's yeah, it's quite silly.
So I have a feeling that, and this is what I'm meant by the educational system being fragile, I tell students and parents that education should be vertical. That is to say, I use the image of a mountain. Mm-hmm. And the further you move along in your education, the higher up that mountain you should go. And because it's a mountain, it's harder and harder to climb up. What's happened is that I think education has been very horizontal, so that students don't have a sense of increased awareness that their knowledge should go up, that their effort to achieve that knowledge should go up, and that should be occurring each year. If you look at what happens in grade school, as I say, most of the learning takes place in the classroom. But what students have to do as they move into middle school is understand that because they're supposed to be learning more and more, more and more learning has to take place outside the classroom. And certainly that's true in college. I mean, in college, most of the learning that you do takes place outside the classroom. The professor sort of sets the framework of what you're supposed to learn, and then you leave the classroom and you learn it.
One of the things that we're finding that has gone out in the American educational system is the teachers appear to simply present some information, and that ends the learning process because the kids don't then get the opportunity to really spend time practicing and becoming masterful of that point of knowledge. The system is almost like an assembly line, just throwing information at the kids, which a lot of which supposed to have been either memorized or able to be repeated. They don't really understand them. For example, in mathematics, they don't understand the mechanics of why they're doing what they're doing in the sequence of functions when they perform mathematical computations or equations.
I don't believe they do. They're learning on a day-by-day basis, and because teachers give so many tests, and I think teachers do that to encourage students to learn better, I'm afraid that giving too many tests actually encourages students to learn in the short term, but not in the long term. So as you say, they don't see connections even between the information that and knowledge that they're supposed to gain in a given course. And then, of course, the evaluations that teachers give now, because just in the span of probably 30 to 40 years, and in education that's a very short period of time, if you go back in time, certainly when I went off to college 40 years ago, only about 15 to 20% of the students who went to college had A averages, and now it's more like 75 to 80%.
Levels down.
There, and that goes back to what we originally said here. That's why that literacy level is so low. It doesn't mean that students are less intelligent. Their potential is there, and that's right. The SATs and ACTs say the potential, but what the SATs and ACTs, of course, can't measure is can they turn that potential, into reality.
And function with the knowledge that's been given to
Correct.
Them. Correct. Yeah, that's a part of the missing equation is we, in our own book, we in fact have a chapter on the issue of the balance between theoretical knowledge and the pure significance of things and the application knowledge in the real physical universe of being able to do it and practicing it sufficiently enough to become very fluent with it. And this trick nowadays that kids think that they can cram for a week before an exam in order to hopefully remember enough of it for when they're in the examination really isn't education.
And American education, not being familiar with education around the world, I know about American education. We've always been very short on explaining what you just said, the connection between the theoretical and the practical. We can give them theoretical information, but we don't talk to students about how this information has very practical value. In fact, I don't think we tell students at all what I consider very important fact of education, is that education is really practice for the working life that they're going to lead after their education is completed. I think I surprise a lot of students when I say, you know, you're going to be a student throughout your life. You're always going to have people asking you to do something, to learn something. People are always going to ask you to perform at a higher level and keep on performing at a higher level. And that's what you're supposed to be practicing in high school. But I don't think they get that.
I notice on your website you've actually got a wonderful sheet that I printed out, and Virginia found it as well. She found it very valuable. More tips about studying. In our chapter one, we actually discussed the difference between studying and learning. And of course, specifically, they are quite different things. But I love your tips. What I'd like for you to do is to give our listeners a brief little run through a couple of these tips on the website. So I do recommend that you do go to Dr. Bob's website. Give us the website address again, Dr. Bob.
The website is the name of the book, and that is areyoureallyreadyforcollege.com.
And it's the same material as is at GetCollegeSmart.com.
Right. You can also access it through GetCollegeSmart.com. Yes.
So these tips about studying, Dr. Bob, how about punching a few of those across for us?
The book, as you know, is divided into 12 sections. And what I refer to, each section, I refer to a new strategy that students have to develop in order to become good learners. Are you asking about the theoretical ideas behind each of these 12 things, or are you talking about specific tips that students should do in order to become competent studiers?
Well, that's a very good proposition. Maybe if we give them the rationale behind why you've written them up and what their real value is, then they'll better appreciate and understand the value and why they should actually engage these points. How's that?
Okay, that's very good.
Yeah, do it both ways. We've got time.
Okay, very good. I want students to understand their education. I want them to, first of all, understand that they're going to be students and learners throughout their life. And during this period of time, which is their formal education, that's when they're supposed to become the best kind of learners that they can be. So that when they're in the classroom, their job is two things: to gain the knowledge of the subject they're studying, but also develop their expertise and talent in studying that subject. I explained to them, for example, that the reason they study different kinds of subjects while they're in school is because, and this is literally true, different parts of their brain have to develop, so that we are developing the mathematical and the verbal part of our brain. The way we study sociology and history and foreign languages, those are different ways of developing our brain. There's our different ways of thinking. And again, this is part of this long-term development that they need, you know, after they finish their formal education. I also emphasize that the matter of setting goals, both short-term and long-term. And I tell them that they have to, as much as they can, stop living in the present. They have to keep their feet on the ground, of course, and their short-term goals are set on a day-by-day basis. For example, I'm going to set a short-term goal of making sure I study every night. I'm going to set a short-term goal to make sure that I do better on my next math test. But understand that in completing these short-term goals, you're aiming for a long-term goal. Now, that long-term goal educationally should be college, because these days, really, everybody needs to have a college education in order to handle what they're going to be facing in the work world in the future. Things change so much, they simply have to be good learners. That's it. And college should give them, you know, all of the mental, intellectual skills that they need.
To do it, as we say on our website, all of life is a learning curve.
Precisely that. That's the way you sum it up, yes. So I also tell students that, again, emphasizing that learning takes time, also that learning is a process. In my book, I show a little cartoon with a student sitting at a desk and with a funnel in his head with somebody pouring information into it. I tell students, of course, this isn't learning. Learning isn't pouring information into your head. You know, learning is processing the information so that information stays with you.
And you then can use it.
And you can use it, and you can relate it to the other things that you learn. I also emphasize communication skills, not only reading and writing, but talking and speaking. Talking and listening. And I particularly emphasize talking and listening because I think in terms of communication skills, those are the ones that students have the most deficiency.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's interesting.
Yes. I think they talk a lot, but they don't communicate very well.
Well, that's true. Thanks, Bob. That looks like a good spot to end off on today's program of The Learning Curve with Roger and Virginia. We've been listening to Dr. Robert Newman, the author of Are You Really Ready for College? His website is getcollegesmart.com. And I do recommend you go there because there's some wonderful information available at his site, including a lot of the contents of his book and worksheets about how you can really prepare yourself properly for college and win at it when you're there. Next week, we're going to be continuing with the second part of our interview with Dr. Robert Newman. Next week really is going to be a good week. You're going to hear about learning in layers and when you're in college, really how to succeed at it. This as distinct from preparing for college. You've been listening to Roger and Virginia at The Learning Curve. And if you want to learn more about how to overcome the seven barriers to comprehension, go to howtolearneasily.com. If you've got any questions of Roger and Virginia about our material on these programs, you can email us questions@howtolearneasily.com.